The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast, opening up the final few days of August. Basically, there is 1 month of the 2018 baseball season remaining, and the Milwaukee Brewers are still in the playoffs if the season ends today. They're a half game behind the St. Louis Cardinals for the lead in the wild card chase, but they are that second and final playoff spot right now in the wild card hunt. They are a game ahead of the Colorado Rockies, but it's a very tight race. There's tons of teams in the conversation here. Two games back lurking, Philadelphia Phillies. Two and a half games back, the very dangerous Los Angeles Dodgers. And if you're focused on this race, you're even probably watching what Arizona and Atlanta are doing, because they are leading their divisions right now, but very close to these teams just behind them in the playoff chase. So everybody feels like they're in play. A lot of balls in the air, but the Milwaukee Brewers, after a 4-2 homestand, are still in the playoffs. And they're, even with everybody else seemingly winning every night, things are still looking up. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I am the host of the Milwaukee Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast. I'm going to be joined shortly by Tom Hodricourt, one of the beat writers for the Journal Sentinel. We'll get caught up on this past homestand, this 4-2 showing against the Reds and the Pirates. Some things that were crazy about it, and maybe a little disappointing depending on the game you're talking about. But certainly coming out 4-2 is fine, especially if it means they are still in the squarely in that playoff conversation. After we talk to Tom, I am going to chat with Brewers third baseman Mike Moustakas, who was the hyped midseason acquisition. I don't know if hyped is the right word, but he was a midseason acquisition from the Kansas City Royals. He has endeared himself very quickly to the Milwaukee Brewers fan base. He has made some flashy plays over at third base. He's hit a few home runs, four of them, I believe, since joining the team. He hit two home runs in this homestand, including a two-run homer on Sunday that was big, and a three-run win over the Pirates, and then a two-run homer on Friday night, which that game wound up being probably the most improbable win I think I've ever seen involving the Milwaukee Brewers. We'll talk to Tom about that one, because that definitely deserves some contemplation. The Friday night win over the Pittsburgh Pirates in 15 innings, just a head-scratching, mind-blowing win for the Milwaukee Brewers. So a couple things before we get to Tom. Wanted to remind you that if you find us wherever you get your podcasts, I mean, we're at Google Play, we're on Stitcher, but especially if you are on Apple Podcasts, you should leave a rating and a review for us in your iTunes app. My understanding is that every rating, every review gives us a little more reach. I will not pretend to know how the algorithms work that allow that to happen, but every piece of feedback you give us helps us. So please, 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 if you find us on iTunes and Apple Podcasts and have enjoyed the podcast this year, then please leave us a note. Let us know what you think. And if you just want to leave feedback on the good old-fashioned Twitter, that's where you can find me, at J.R. Radcliffe. Cliff, that's J-R-R-A-D-C-L-I-F-F-E. Let me know what you think, if there's any guests you want me to try to bring in, any questions you have for me or for the beat reporters. Be happy to read one of those on an upcoming edition of the podcast. Also, you should know the Journal Sentinel is going to be holding a Labor Day sale. You're going to be able to get some pretty great deals, an introductory offer for new subscribers, and you definitely should check that out if you do not have a subscription already to the Journal Sentinel. JS Online in particular, the digital subscription savings are going to be really good. For as low as $1 for the first 3 months, you're going to be able to check us out. I know sometimes you hit that wall of 5 or 10 articles a month, whatever it is that blocks you from seeing more content. We know you're going to be following the Brewers here through the month of September. If you're a sports fan, this is the month to get your JS Online subscription and get that full-fledged access, because it's not just, obviously, what's going on with the Brewers, although Tom Hodricourt and Todd Rozek are the best in the business. But there's that team up in Green Bay, just a few few clicks down the road, up the road. They're going to be beginning their season here in September as well. They've played 3 exhibition games. They're just about there. We know you're going to be interested in what the Packers are doing. The Wisconsin Badgers, very highly regarded. Pretty much everybody thinks that team is going to be in the college football playoff this year. And they were on the cover of Sports Illustrated. They've got a lot of assets coming back. You should check out all of Jeff Patricus's coverage. Again, that's at jsonline.com of the Badgers football team. And hey, the Buck season is not that far off. They've got a new arena, folks. Pfizer Forum opens up this year. I know the Bucks won't really be getting going in earnest until the end of October, but you definitely are going to want to catch up and follow Matt Velasquez, again, one of the best in the business, if not the best, covering the Milwaukee Bucks. And there's all of that at jsonline.com. Here is what you do. Go to jsonline.com/deal. Starting on Tuesday, our Labor Day sale kicks off. you can check out the ridiculous rates. And it's not just digital. If you want to get a paper in your hands, I am all for that. You definitely should check out those rates. They'll be drastically reduced for the Labor Day sale. But jsonline.com/deal is the place to go, and you're going to learn all about that. It's going to be only available for a limited time, so you're going to want to check that out starting on Tuesday. So without further ado, though, let's chat now with Tom Haudricourt and catch up on what this Brewers team has done in the last week. And here now is Tom Haudricourt, Brewers beat reporter for the Journal Sentinel. You can find all of his stuff at jsonline.com. And Tom, I want to start with the game on Friday night against the Pittsburgh Pirates. The Brewers won in 15 innings, 7-6. It's got to be one of the most improbable wins. It's definitely one of the most improbable wins I can remember. A pitcher batting with two outs, down two, gets a walk. You get big hits from Eric Kratz and Orlando Arcia, who haven't been pounding the ball this year, but both came up in the clutch. I mean, is there anything you could compare that to? Have you seen a game like that where the Brewers were just so far down and managed to work their way back for a huge win?
No, because historically it just doesn't happen. You know, there's various sites that publish a percentage of winning during various times of games. And when the Brewers were down two in the bottom 15th and two outs and two strikes on Kratz, what was their percentage of winning? 0.1% or something? I mean, what could it have possibly been?
Yeah, actually, WPA doesn't take into account who's batting, so it actually wasn't that low at that moment. It was maybe 8 or 9% with Kratz batting. But, I mean, you and I know it was much lower than that, given the people that, the bottom third of the order and Lyles. It doesn't understand that a pitcher is batting in that spot. It could have, yeah, I agree with you. Percent.
And I'll be honest with you, off the bat, I thought Kratz had grounded out to short. I did not realize their shortstop was playing him in the hole like that. And, that ball wasn't up the middle. It was to the left side of the infield, but the shortstop was playing over, and he's a really good shortstop too, Newman, and dived and couldn't catch it. And, so now you've tied it. If Arcia doesn't win it, how many more innings do you play in? What the heck configuration of lineups do you have? How many pitchers do you have playing in the field and pinch running and pitch batting, and so who knows what would have happened? So Arcia's hit was huge, too, to win it and just stop it from going forward. Craig Counsell told us the next day that probably he'd go with Jordan Lyles one more inning, and then his Saturday starter, Yolish Chacin, would have pitched, which means the Sunday starter would have had to pitch Saturday and on and on. Everything gets changed. They do have an off day Monday, which helps. But still, it would have been madness. And which brings us back to before Kratz's hit, relief pitcher Jordan Lyles walking right after Braun struck out. All the Pittsburgh pitcher has to do is throw strikes, and he couldn't do it. He got sent down the next day, too.
I saw that.
What was his name? Holmes.
Clay Holmes, yeah. What a note to go out on for Clay Holmes.
Well, I would have sent him down right on the spot. After walking the pitcher, I would have walked out to the mound and said, son, we're not just taking you out of the game. We're taking you out of the big leagues.
That's tough.
Basically,
he struck out Braun on three pitches. It's not like he was struggling.
And now all of a sudden he can't throw a strike. And also, by all accounts, Lyles was told, don't swing. I asked counsel, I said, are you allowed to just send them up there without a bat? And he said the rules do not allow that, to go just walk up there. But basically, they just didn't want him to swing. So he said he obviously would have swung if the count got to 3-2, because then you pretty much have to if it's down the middle. But he walked on a 3-1 count, and then Kratz is hit, and then RC is hit, and then you have a ridiculous victory, which they followed up with a really stinky loss Saturday night, by the way.
Yes, that's true. The 9-1 loss, but they do bounce back Sunday. They get a 7-4 win to win the series, 4-2 on the homestand. Brewers have had a habit lately of getting out to big leads. The 4-0 number in the first inning has become a bit of a bad omen for the Brewers, but on Sunday it was 6-0, and then Chase Anderson let the Pirates kind of back in the game. Has really struggled with the long ball this year, leads the National League in home runs allowed, which is not where you want to be, and the Pirates made it 6-4 before big homer by Jonathan Scope, and the Brewers held on from there. Chase Anderson is under contract next year. It's a very team-friendly deal. I mean, there is some potential flexibility there, but almost certainly Chase Anderson will be part of this rotation in 2019. But what do you make of his standing right now? Because I don't think it matters as much anymore who the number one pitcher is, number two, number three, and so on. But the question is, will they have five guys who could maybe supersede him or Junior Guerra? I mean, there's a lot of questions in that rotation with a lot of player movement coming up potentially for 2019.
Yeah, with the stuff Chase has, it's hard to believe that he wouldn't be part of the rotation next year. And as you noted, he's signed through next year too. But this is a puzzling year, JR. The home runs, you noted, he's blown a bunch of leads today. They got him out of there before he could give up all of the lead. He was getting killed on breaking balls that inning. Why he stopped throwing his fastball, I don't know. It's just very puzzling. When you think that going into spring training, in their minds, their number one and two pitchers in their rotation were Chase Anderson and Zach Davies. Their top two guys last year, Chase had a great year. Zach Davies won 17 games. He was among the league leaders in wins. And when you think about that, and then think about what's happened with Chase being so up and down, so home run prone, and Zach Davies basically being hurt all year. He's only made eight starts, and he's on the, he's been down in the minors now. They're waiting till the September 1 call-up date with him. I think actually he has to wait till the second. So if I would have told you going into spring training that Zach Davies is going to be a non-factor and Chase Anderson is going to have all kinds of issues with home runs and blowing leads and stuff, would you have said the Brewers would be in the playoff chase with 5 weeks left in the season?
No, it's crazy. I mean, Junior Guerra didn't make this team out of spring training, and he's been huge. He's been struggling lately, but yeah, this rotation has needed some repairs, and they have figured it out. I don't quite know how. So the Davies, you mentioned he's sent to the minors. He was sent to Single A so that he could be closer in the Midwest. I mean, he's obviously going to be called back up on September whenever he's available in the early September. But it is an interesting vote of confidence in my mind for Freddy Peralta, because they could very easily have said, okay, Davies is ready. Maybe he's not lighting it up in his rehab starts, but he's ready and we need to trim Peralta's innings. They've said they don't want to do that, but now they're really showing they don't want to do that they have confidence in Freddy Peralta staying in the rotation. His last outing was a shutout, very good outing against the Reds. I mean, I looked at him as sort of maybe a question mark for the rest of this year and then into next year. And now I'm starting to think this guy's he's getting to the point where you've got to think of him as a lock for the rest of this season and again in 2019.
If Peralta was pitching poorly now, then they might have been tempted to go ahead and put Davies into the rotation and make that change. But he's pitched well his last couple of times out. The first inning's everything for him. When he gets through that unscathed, he usually has a good game. Davies, they just don't seem impressed with the way he's thrown the ball on a very long minor league rehab assignment. So they're putting him in the rotation. Interestingly enough, David Stearns told us on Friday that the plan is for Davies to make starts in September, and I believe he said important starts. Can't wait to see what that means. They're off every Thursday in September, so it allows all kinds of flexibility with the rotation. And then also, if all of a sudden you're going to give Davies some starts, maybe that's how they're going to regulate or restrict Peralta's innings, by incorporating a few starts by Davies with those off days, and maybe in essence a turn or two gets skipped to kind of keep his innings in check. So it's going to be very interesting. Remember last September when Garza pitched his way out of the rotation and Nelson got hurt, and they were using a bullpen day every 5 days, and Jeffers was starting, and they were using like eight pitchers in a game, and it was just a mess. And then they ended up missing by one game too. So just think what would have happened if their rotation would have been in order. So it's going to be very interesting to see, how they use Davies, whether they do back Peralta off a little bit, just what they do with their rotation. But all we hear is about how they need to get a starter, they need to get a starter, they need to get a starter, yet they never get a starter.
Well, they almost did have one earlier this week when it was reported that the Brewers had gotten the waiver claim on Matt Harvey, but they could not work out a deal with the Reds, which is kind of its own separate story. Very surprising. It almost seems as though the Reds didn't want to move him just purely because the owner liked him, or really felt that they could re-sign him for next year, which seems like a long shot. But whatever. I mean, what do you think it was that made Harvey an attractive option? Because his numbers are pretty comparable to what the Brewers have already on, you know, in their starting rotation, as a lot of people noted. And do you think it says anything about what comes next? I mean, do you think they're still actively pounding the pavement for a starting pitcher, that Harvey was a special case?
Well, because the Brewers, don't confirm reports or rumors or whatever you want to call this stuff leaking out, we don't know what their actual interest was in Harvey, and if they made a strong push to acquire him after they were awarded a waiver claim, assuming they were awarded the waiver claim. You hear reports out of Cincinnati that it was the Reds that backed off because the owner Bob Castellini supposedly liked Harvey and thinks if he keeps him the rest of the season, it would help their chances of re-signing him as a free agent. Well, he's represented by Scott Boras, and good luck with sentimental feelings, of getting to sign him because you didn't trade him. Here's how you get to sign a Scott Boras client: you offer him the most money. That's how you get to sign him, not hold on to him at the end of the trade deadline. So we'll see what happens there. But they didn't pick up anybody on July 31st before the non-waiver deadline. They didn't pick up anybody so far this year before, during the waiver period. You have till August 31st, so there's still a few more days. But who's left out there? You know what? I mean, there's no, I don't see a Justin Verlander out there like last year when he, literally saved Houston's season by coming to them on August 31st, a couple of minutes before the deadline. So let's see if they add anybody and what difference he would make. You think at this point, if a guy's any good, he's not going to clear waivers up to them. So David Stearns keeps saying we have confidence in our pitching group, and the fact that he hasn't done anything to augment it, kind of makes you believe that's the way he feels.
Yeah, that's definitely true. On the offensive side, Jonathan Scope showed some signs of working out of his slump since they acquired him at the July deadline. He did hit two homers on this homestand, including a pretty big one in my estimation on Sunday, and had, I think, six hits, five hits in the homestand. But he hasn't been appearing very often in the starting lineups, and it seems as though the team is kind of slowly but surely working him into more of the guy who's usually the guy who comes off the bench. Do you think the team is losing confidence in him? I mean, have we hit the point now where the slump is starting to get worrisome, or maybe this homestand we really are seeing him start to work out of it, and that the team is confident he will in September?
Well, his playing time has definitely eroded since they traded for him, and it's tied directly to his lack of productivity. So, as you noted, he's done a few more things recently that have been positive, but no one's going to suggest that the trade has worked out as the Brewers hoped it would. And Moustakas has gotten some big hits, including a big home run on Sunday. So at least that part of it's worked out well, but they have control of Scope beyond this year too, so they have an investment in him past 2018, so we'll see how that goes. But he's scuffled and he hasn't lived up to expectations. So Jonathan Villar didn't set the bar very high before he left, but Scope
Right.
has stayed under that bar. And so we still got 5 weeks left in the season. He still has time to make some contributions. Let's see if he does.
You mentioned Moustakas. I've got him coming up, an interview with him later in this podcast. I'm going to sneak a question in on you that I asked Todd Rosiak last week, because you wrote about Christian Yelich, who's white hot right now. Lorenzo Cain has had a hitting streak. I mean, it seems like those two guys are just, they've been clicking all year, but now they're as locked in as they've been. Which, if you had an MVP vote, who do you give it to? Yelich or Lorenzo Cain? I mean, Yelich has the numbers, but I think Cain is sort of that, sort of does everything else that you can't really see on paper. So, like, who would you vote for in this case?
Or do you give votes to Jesus Aguilar for literally
Sure.
single-handedly keeping the team afloat when nobody else was doing anything, including Cain and Yelich? So, he's among the league leaders in a bunch of different categories. So, Who of those three guys is the MVP? If Aguilar wouldn't have come out of nowhere and been fantastic for as long as he was and make the All-Star team, they might have lost so many games during that stretch that they wouldn't even be in the running right now. So it's they're all very, very good candidates. I hear a lot of arguments for Kane because his WAR is very high. A lot of that has to do with the contributions he makes on defense too, which don't show up in the home run and RBI categories. Yelich has been fantastic, everything they wanted. It's incredible when you think about it that Yelich and Kane have pretty much, if they haven't exceeded expectations, they've certainly met expectations. And Aguilar, as just noted, has been way above expectations. Yet they still, on so many occasions, struggle to score runs. It's really hard to figure.
Yeah, I mean, consider how many consecutive innings since they went from the 1st to the 15th without a run Friday night, and then just one run all of Saturday. They do kind of bust out of it then with a big inning, a 6-run inning on Sunday. This might be a dumb question. There was a lot of emphasis earlier this season when the Brewers had all those games without any breaks at all. They clearly ran out of gas right before the All-Star break, or at least it seemed clear. What do you think of the schedule they've got now, where they've had 5 off days? Monday will be their 5th off day in 14 days or 15 days. They've got a lot of off days in September. They've had a lot, they've had a lot of off days in August too. Does that hurt a rhythm? Do you think the team? I'm sure they prefer that to the alternative. But do you think that bothers a team that they can't get into a rhythm because they aren't playing a full week of baseball games at any point?
I think at this time of year, the rest trumps the rhythm thing, and
Sure.
what it lets them do, they sure could have used these 4 straight Thursdays off in September last year when, as we just noted, Garza pitched himself out of the rotation and Jimmy Nelson got hurt, and they were pitching bullpen guys a lot. They could have used those off days to just skip turns in the rotation. It's going to allow them to be very creative with their pitching that last month. Let's not forget they're going to have expanded rosters too, so the bullpen's going to have extra arms out there as well.
For sure, yeah.
So, I see it as a good thing. They had 20 straight days going into the All-Star break and 17 straight days coming out of it. So basically, for 5 weeks, the only break they got was the All-Star break. No one else had anything like that. And so now they're reaping the benefits of it. They've still played more games than almost any other team they're competing with. And those teams will catch up with them soon. So I think the fact that it allows them to do what they want to with their pitching staff trumps the rhythm thing. I mean, no one's going to complain about having one day off a week. That's kind of nice.
Right. Right, definitely. Let's revisit Scooter Jeanette briefly. He hit a big home run when the Reds beat the Brewers on Tuesday early in the homestand. I think pretty much at the time that the Brewers waived him, there was sort of a universal feeling that Jonathan Villar was the better player to invest in. They were planning to move Villar to second base. Scooter Jeanette was kind of the odd man out. And then, of course, he's gone on to have a phenomenal year this year with the Reds. He was a big contributor last year. Now, plenty of people questioning the decision in retrospect. Do you feel the team erred in any way here? I mean, they obviously, I don't think there's any way you could say they made the wrong call, but they did release him when he had an option remaining. He had a pretty high salary for a guy that you would have put at AAA, and I think he was making about $2.5 million at the time. I mean, do you look back and think, well, they should have just optioned him, or that at the moment it just made sense that they waive him completely?
Well, I mean, it's obvious now in hindsight that they overestimated VR's ability to be good over a long period of time. He had that really good first season. They thought he'd keep doing it, and he wasn't capable of doing it. So, and he saved them $23 million by turning down an extension offer in the spring of what, 2017. And so at least he did them that favor.
Yeah,
So
no doubt.
that would have been a real mess if he would have taken the. Although if he took the contract, maybe he would have relaxed and played better too. Who knows? Only he knows that. But I mean, Scooter wasn't going to play for him. There were some defensive things they didn't like about him. Some other things they thought he lacked. Everybody knew he swung. He had some offensive upside. No one saw the power that he was going to generate. And certainly, it doesn't hurt to be in Great American Ballpark for 81 games, but you have to give Scooter credit. I mean, he took took advantage of a great opportunity in Cincinnati, made himself into an all-star player. Now he's going to make some money.
Yeah, no doubt.
But what would have happened to him in Milwaukee? He wasn't going to play. He was going to be on the bench, so he wouldn't have got the opportunity to do what he did in Cincinnati. And so he may never blossom into anything more than he already was. So to me, he's the old, he's exhibit A for change of scenery. Just no way to project that he would do the same thing. Now, could they have tried harder to get something for him instead of just letting him go on a waiver claim? I don't know. But they, as you noted, did not want to have a $2.5 million salary in AAA. And so they decided to see if anybody would take a shot at him. The Reds get credit for taking a gamble on him, and Scooter gets credit for taking advantage of the opportunity and being good. And VR didn't turn out, so they turned the page. But is Scope gonna recover from this terrible beginning to his Brewers career and be a productive second baseman next year? That's gonna be an interesting thing to watch, because right now they still haven't found a second baseman.
Yeah, it seems like that position is just cursed for the moment. The Brewers just haven't been able to settle on a regular that they can really count on at that spot. Back to going into the bullpen. The bullpen's been battered a little bit. Corey Knebel struggles, obviously well documented. The team optioned him this week to just give him a little bit of a break prior to the start of again, he'll be back in September. As a September call-up, almost certainly. How do you think the Brewers handle him? Is this just to see how he does on this rehab assignment and kind of decide what to do with him there? Will he be right back in some leverage situations when they bring him back up? I mean, he's a pretty big puzzle at this point.
Yeah, he is. I did my Sunday column on the history of Brewers closers coming and going, and right now he fits right in with the ones who've come and gone. So we'll see if he can regather himself and get his job back. Doug Melvin used to tell me all the time, and he certainly had to go through his share of closers, that the one thing relief pitchers can't do that starting pitchers can do when they're scuffling is throw bullpen sessions on the side. A starter only pitches every 5 days. If there's an off day in there, maybe six. He could throw one or two bullpen sessions on the side in between starts and work on stuff and maybe work some kinks out and get past some issues. Relievers have to be ready every night in general, so they can't throw these all full go, 96 mile an hour bullpen sessions for 20 minutes, because suppose you need them to pitch that night and they're worn out from throwing that bullpen session. So he said the hardest thing is for a reliever is that you have to go into games and try to work out their issues. How that usually ends up badly. So I think this was a good plan. They optioned Corey Knebel to AAA. He's having all kind, having all kinds of command issues. You have 72 hours to report, so they're going to use the first 48 hours of that to work in the bullpen with pitching coach Derek Johnson and bullpen coach Lee Tunnell, try to work through some things, and then report to Colorado Springs in a few days and see how it works in game situations there before bringing him back. So I think it's a smart plan, because it wasn't working. They use them in every different situation you could, but it's like you can't, if you put a poor defender in the field, you can't hide him. The ball finds him. Same thing with a relief pitcher. If he's struggling, no matter what part of the game you put him in, trouble finds him. So I think it's a good plan, and we won't know if it works until we see what happens with when Knebel rejoins the team.
Right, so last one, so those September call-ups will definitely include Knebel and Davies, like we said. Domingo Santana will be back with the team. Any names that we should be looking for that will surprise? I mean, Brandon Woodruff will probably be back, guys that we've seen this year. The one name that I think about is Quentin Torres Costa, is a left-handed relief pitcher that they might be able to make use of, but they'd have to find, room for guys on the 40-man if they're not people that we're already thinking of. They'll need a catcher. It's unclear if Jacob Nottingham will be healthy, so they might have to make a move to get Jett Bandy on the 40-man, and that would be, or Christian Betancourt, and that would be complicated. Anything you're looking for that might be a little bit under the radar at this point?
Well, the Torres Costa thing is interesting because, there's Dan Jennings is struggling now in the lefty on lefty matchups. JR, the Torres Costa is one of the many minor leaguers who has to be protected this year, or he's eligible for the Rule 5 draft. because he's pitched so well and done pretty good in that not good pitching environment in the Colorado Springs, it wouldn't surprise me if they went ahead and put him on the 40-man, brought him up in September and saw what he could do in some lefty on lefty situations. Because then you'll know whether you should keep him on the 40-man in the offseason and protect him from the Rule 5, or if it was just a pipe dream. So I think that was good on your part to throw his name out there, because he would be one of the guys that's maybe a little out of the loop. Otherwise, it's going to be Jacob Barnes, people like that that are already on the 40-man that we'll see come up. Domingo Santana, I'm sure, will be back. Broxton. And so I don't think they'll bring up a ton of people and just have guys trip all over each other in the dugout. But they'll bring up guys that they certainly think they can use. You can never have too many arms in your bullpen. I know that'll take innings away from Eric Kratz or Hernán Pérez, but they'll just have to get over it.
It's certainly no knucklers for the foreseeable future. Tom Hodricourt, you can read all of his stuff at jsonline.com. Be sure to check him out. The Brewers again begin their brief road trip, two-city road trip in Cincinnati on Tuesday. Thanks again, Tom. We'll chat with you again really soon.
Thanks, JR.
Thanks to Tom. We move now to a conversation with Mike Moustakas, third baseman for the Milwaukee Brewers. He was acquired shortly before the July 31st trading deadline, and he's been pretty great since then. He's hit a couple big home runs. He's made some great plays at third. I asked him a lot about his early days because he was the number two overall pick by the Royals in the 2007 MLB draft. He right behind David Price, who's certainly made a good career for himself. He was the number one overall pick out of Vanderbilt, but Mike Moustakas was number two. He obviously worked his way up to the Royals. He was part, and I asked him a lot about this, of probably the greatest regular season game I've watched that didn't involve the Milwaukee Brewers. I get to see a lot of those games, but the Oakland Athletics, Kansas City, I just said regular season, didn't I? This is definitely not a regular season game. The playoff game, the wild card playoff game between the Oakland Athletics and the Kansas City Royals. And it was in 2014. It was insane. Went extras, kind of galvanized Kansas City's entire baseball fan base. And they ended up going to the World Series after winning that game and falling in seven games to Madison Bumgarner and the San Francisco Giants. They came back the next year, won the World Series in 2015. Of course, the Royals have a ton of Brewers connections. Ned Yost, the manager for the Brewers, now the manager for the Royals to this day, who won the World Series with the Royals. Lorenzo Cain, who was a part of that team in 2014 and 15, he's, of course, a key contributor to the Brewers now this year. Jeremy Jeffress was with the Royals briefly. He was part of the trade, along with Lorenzo Cain, that netted Zach Greinke back in 2011. So I talked to Mike about some of these things. I mean, Mike Moustakas, outside of, I mean, Lorenzo Cain and Christian Yelich right now are kind of the two centerpieces of that offense, but Mike Moustakas is making some serious contributions as well. So I asked a lot about his career and now his arrival in Milwaukee, including that incident that went viral. Incident, like it's a bad thing. It was a great thing where he picked up a Sharpie, bought the Sharpie in Target, and signed some merchandise for a fan, signed some clothing for a fan, and that got caught on camera and wound up going viral in his first few days in Milwaukee. So a pretty cool thing as well. So here is Mike Moustakas. My guest is Mike Moustakas, third baseman for the Milwaukee Brewers, newly acquired at the July trade deadline. And I'm going to go back though all the way to the 2007. You're the second overall pick of the draft. I know David Price, I think, was kind of the consensus number one guy. But was there, kind of take me through that time period? Was there any thought that you could be the number one guy? I mean, was that ever a possibility for you?
No, definitely didn't think I was going to be number one. Went into that draft thinking I was going to go mid to later in the first round, and the Kansas City Royals decided to take me at number two overall, which was an unbelievable thing for me and my family. And I was able to share that with everybody at my house. It was a pretty special moment.
Going through the Royals farm system, they were so, as highly regarded, I think, as any farm system has been. Was it ultra competitive? Was it fun to kind of be part of that wave of guys that were going to, hopefully take that franchise into a new direction?
Yeah, absolutely. I was Dayton's first draft pick, and
right.
So I was kind of, the first guy to kind of go through that whole thing. And then, in the 07 draft, we had a bunch of really good baseball players. And then the 08 obviously came with Haas and, a bunch of all-stars that followed in those draft picks. And, it really set the tone was the guys that were already in the minor league camp over there. They did an unbelievable job, keeping us all humble, keeping us all with our heads on right and making sure we went to work every single day, and that was huge. Those guys that people won't ever hear of that we played against and made us better baseball players and got us through the grind in the minor leagues.
One of the biggest trades in Brewers franchise history is 2011, where they trade for Zach Greinke and get a bunch of players in return, including Lorenzo Cain, who we are obviously now teammates with again. You, I don't think it made your debut yet, but you were knocking on the door at that point. Do you have any recollections of that trade, if that impacted you or the guys around you? Do you have any, was that something that sticks out to you?
Yeah, it was a huge trade for us, obviously. We got Lo Cain, Jeremy Jeffries, and Odorizzi. And Eske, so obviously that made a huge deal for our organization and for what we were going to do moving forward. We got our shortstop, we got our center fielder, we got a starting pitcher, we got a great relief pitcher, and ended up being two huge pieces of the core of what we were able to accomplish. And then obviously Jeremy and Jake did a great job and have phenomenal careers themselves. And Jeremy's now an all-star and a phenomenal pitcher. So it's definitely a great trade for us, and obviously ended up working out pretty well for both sides.
I feel like I could talk all day about the 2014 wild card game. I know you were taken out late in that game, but obviously you contributed to that one, and that was a big deal for Kansas City, a lot like Milwaukee, just sort of that small market, that galvanizing moment. What are sort of the things that stick out about that game for you?
It's tough to stick out, or tough for one thing to stick out. That game was so emotional, so long, and it was an unbelievable time, unbelievable experience to go through that. I just remember leading up to it, we were on Monday Night Football for the Chiefs-Patriots game, and all the excitement going into that was awesome. And getting Lester on the mound and playing against, guys that ended up playing with, Voder and Hamill and guys on the other team. It's pretty cool, and it's fun to be able to go out there and mess around and talk trash to some of these guys. But that's honestly one of the greatest games I think I've ever seen on both sides. And, I say it still, like, it didn't matter if whoever won or lost. That game was unbelievable, and it was played such heart and determination that it was a fulfilling game no matter what happened.
And so that season ends in the World Series, 7 games against the Giants. How did the 2015 playoff run? Did that feel more like a business trip because you guys had now been there at that point, or was it just, obviously you came out with the prize at the end, so it had to be just as fun, I think, at the end?
But. Yeah, we, I think, going through the playoffs that year in 14, we swept our way through it, and we felt pretty confident going into the World Series. And we ran into the Giants and Madison Bumgarner, who had an unbelievable postseason run. But I think we felt a little uneasy about how everything ended up. We felt like we were a great team and we had a chance to win it. And we started believing in that, and I think that's why we were so good in 2015, is that we finally understood how good we were. And earlier in our careers, we had trouble winning one-run games, and once we figured out how to do that, I think that's what took us over the edge, and we found a way to get to our bullpen and let those guys go out and do their thing.
What was the role Ned Yost played? He obviously is a guy that a lot of people, Milwaukee Brewers fans remember. How did he sort of command that team and lead you guys?
Ned was unbelievable. We had a bunch of young guys starting early, and Ned, in the beginning, looked over us a lot, made sure we were all doing the right things and making sure we were in the right spots and putting us in a position to succeed. And then as we got older and as the more time we spent together, the more trust he had in us and the longer the leash got. And he let us go out there and play our game and let us live in our clubhouse and do what we wanted to do. And we held each other accountable, and he held us accountable. And I think, Ned did a great job of growing with us as people and players and, getting us prepared each and every day and getting us in positions to succeed. And that's what you want your manager to do, is get you in a spot that you feel comfortable and you've got a chance to succeed. And he did a great job doing that for us.
I know you've been asked a lot about this past offseason. It was obviously weird for you and for a lot of players. Was it awkward coming into 2017 because you were headed back to Kansas City, or was there an added level of comfort?
A little bit of both, obviously. The way the season ended the year before definitely was a little different. Didn't think that I would be ending up back in Kansas City, but with what Dayton did for me and my family and giving me an opportunity to come back and play baseball in Kansas City was unbelievable. I've been there my entire life. I've played ball there my entire life. I'm comfortable with everybody there, and to be able to go back there and and have those feelings of comfort and knowing everybody was definitely instrumental in being able to come back and after what seemed to be like a long and tough off season. But you know, once again, Dayton is an unbelievable person, unbelievable man, and you know, gave me an opportunity to go back and play ball where I grew up playing.
So coming to the Brewers, one of the things you did right away, wearing a Giannis jersey on your first like media meet and greet. That's a good way to get on the good side of the Milwaukee fans. What is your relationship to your Greek heritage?
It's not as much as I want it to be. You know, my dad's Greek, and I obviously, you know, I'm Greek and grew up, you know, loving the culture. But there's things that I'd like to do. I want to go visit, you know, a little bit more often and get a little bit more involved, obviously, but you know, it's difficult with baseball and the off season, especially now that I have two kids. It's a little bit harder to do things, but you know, something I'd like to get more involved in for sure.
Yeah. So the last question is about the target Sharpie. I imagine that got a little bit more play than you thought it would. I would have to guess if you're going out in a new market, you'd be surprised to have been noticed. I mean, baseball players don't always get noticed, so so that was interesting.
Yeah, it was cool. You know, I was just in there, you know, shopping for some groceries and stuff with my wife, and you know, little guy and his sister saw me, and he got really excited. He had his Brewer stuff on, and it was pretty cool. You know, I just so happened to be standing next to a Sharpie band and grabbed one of them and opened it up, and I honestly didn't think it was that big of a deal. And I guess somebody snapped a picture of it and saw it. And so obviously with social media and cameras nowadays, you know, obviously it blew up a little bit. But it was definitely pretty cool to be able to, you know, sign an autograph for that kid and you know, make him happy.
All right. Thank you very much, sir.
No problem.
That's all for this edition of the podcast. The Brewers now head on the road. Cincinnati Reds coming up. That begins on Tuesday for 3 games. And then they go to Washington for 3 more games to close out this road trip before they come back home. Lots of home games in September. Lots of off days. Lots of home games. Lots of divisional games. I mean, there's still 6 more to go against both the Reds and the Cardinals. They've got the Cubs coming up. They've got the Cardinals coming up on the docket. So there are 3 games at the end of the year against the Tigers, but this is primarily all about the Central Division. If they're going to win, get a playoff spot, it's going to mean beating these familiar opponents that they see year in, year out, several times. This is going to be a very compelling final month of the season. These games in Washington are also interesting. Washington kind of waved the white flag earlier this week when they moved Daniel Murphy to the Cubs and Matt Adams to the Cardinals, basically saying that they were not, you know, basically not going to be competing for one of these wild card spots. And at 7.5 games out right now, it seems that that's probably true. But they also have had some pretty great, you know, they crushed the Mets on Sunday, and they had a walk-off win from Ryan Zimmerman earlier in the week. I mean, they're not rolling over by any means, as you would expect. So it's going to be a challenge going out to the nation's capital and getting a couple wins or 3 wins if things work out perfectly out there. So that will be an interesting series. And as always, we'll have to see where we are a week from now if the Brewers are still in this playoff hunt or if they are looking up in the standings and chasing one of these teams that are so close to them in the standings right now. I would still be terrified of the Los Angeles Dodgers if I were a Brewers fan, and I am. So I would be worried about that team most of all, even though they are not top of mind. Even though the Phillies and Rockies are technically closer at this moment, the Dodgers are still very much a team in play. So we will check in again next week. Thanks again to Mike Moustakas and Tom Hodricourt for joining me. Hope you enjoyed your time listening to the Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast. We will be back once again next week. Take care.